Pagada por el derrame de la mina propiedad del Grupo México, estos seguramente mantendrán su amor a la tierra y seguirán tratando de mantener sus tradiciones.
La verdad que el panorama es muy negro, ¿no?, para los habitantes de esta región, y ellos lo saben, ¿no? Hoy mismo lo decían en el bloqueo, decían pues que se estaban enfrentando a uno de los poderes económicos más grandes del país y con un gobierno, con gobiernos federales y estatales que ellos consideran pues están actuando totalmente de su lado, solapándolos y haciendo aparentar que van a ir a darles un gran castigo cuando dicen que los van a multar con 40 millones de pesos, cuando eso no es ni la mínima parte de lo que producen al día, ¿no? Y realmente esa multa no significaría nada para ellos, no cambiaría sus esquemas de trabajo, sus esquemas de no proteger al medio ambiente, y pues sí es un panorama muy negro en el tema de poder resarcir los daños, ¿no? Ellos saben que van a enfrentar procesos jurídicos muy largos, que muy probablemente no terminen del todo a su favor o del nada a su favor, y bueno, pues eso es lo que también les quita el sueño a muchos aquí, a muchos productores, los tiene preocupados, muchos nos aceptan, pequeños productores sobre todo aceptan que pues pasan días muy difíciles, ¿no?, los más difíciles de su vida, al ver cómo de la noche a la mañana pueden perder todo y no recuperar nada con el paso de los años, ¿no?
Si el gobierno no va a limpiar el río, si no va a limpiar las aguas del subsuelo, los mantos de agua subterráneos que pudieran contaminarse, si no va a crear otro tipo de fuentes de empleos, si la empresa no va a pagar compensación y daños a las víctimas, entonces, ¿qué se puede anticipar? ¿Alguien está hablando de abandonar la región y migrar a otras partes?
La verdad que es gente tan apegada a su tierra que yo no he escuchado a nadie, ¿no?, hablar de una migración, ¿no? Incluso, pues, están dispuestos a seguir aquí, a seguir enfrentando esta situación. Pero seguramente los más jóvenes pudieran optar por esa opción, que son los que ya naturalmente migran a las ciudades, ¿no?, a Hermosillo, a Nogales, al mismo Cananea. Pero las personas de más edad ya tienen un arraigo y un cariño por cada uno de los lugares de estos pueblos, que son pueblos, déjame decirte que vale mucho la pena conocer, son pueblos con gente muy pulcra, muy limpia, todas las mañanas los ves limpiando los frentes de su casa, son calles muy bien cuidadas, son prácticamente unos paraísos, ¿no? Hasta antes de este derrame, el estado de Sonora es un estado semidesértico y en algunas partes completamente desértico, y aquí en cambio pues ves el verdor, ves la vida que le da este río a toda esta zona. Es fácil enamorarse pues de esta región de Sonora, es una de las regiones más fértiles, y bueno, esta gente seguramente no se va a querer ir, ¿no? Va a enfrentar hasta las últimas consecuencias, y saben que quedarse aquí les puede significar desarrollar muchas enfermedades, ¿no? Sin embargo, pues lo van a hacer, ya las han enfrentado. Mucha gente aquí nos dice que las enfermedades como el cáncer ya han quitado la vida a lo largo de las décadas de mucha gente, ¿no? Y que ellos lo asocian, ¿no?, a las constantes contaminaciones del río, aunque esta pues nunca de una de esta dimensión, ¿no? Así es que bueno, pues ellos siguen firmes en seguir viviendo aquí y enfrentando un panorama muy adverso.
Era el periodista Ulises Gutiérrez Ruelas, hablando por teléfono con el informativo Pacífica desde el estado de Sonora. El secretario de Economía, Ildefonso Guajardo Villarreal, descartó la clausura definitiva de la empresa Buenavista del Cobre, filial de Grupo México. Por su parte, el gobierno de Sonora señala que la relocalización de pozos de agua potable, la instalación de centros de acopio para la compra de los productos elaborados en la región y la realización de trabajos de saneamiento y limpieza en el estado son las estrategias que aplicará en los municipios que resultaron afectados por la contaminación de la fuente. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
En Colombia liberaron al ex paramilitar John Cairo Velázquez, quien purgó 22 años de prisión. Conocido por su alias como Popeye, fue el jefe de sicarios de Pablo Escobar Gaviria, líder del cártel de Medellín, al que se atribuye responsabilidad de la violencia que sufrió Colombia en la década de los 80s y parte de los 90s. El reporte con Lorena Hoyos.
De sicarios del narcotraficante colombiano Pablo Escobar Gaviria. Sobre las manos de Popeye recae la ejecución material de una parte de la violencia que adelantó el cartel de Medellín entre los años 80 y principios de los 90 en Colombia.
Carlos Fernando Galán recuerda que su padre, Luis Carlos Galán, fue asesinado por el cartel de Medellín cuando aspiraba a la presidencia. Para él, el testimonio de Popeye contribuyó a esclarecer parte de la verdad sobre el magnicidio. Sin embargo, considera que en el país reina la impunidad frente a los aliados del narcotráfico.
Los autores intelectuales muchos no respondieron ante la justicia. Los aliados políticos del cartel de Medellín no respondieron ante la justicia. Entonces, Popeye era, al fin y al cabo, un sicario, un autor material. Pero los autores intelectuales, eso es lo más grave. Yo creo que esto debe llevarnos a abrir una discusión sobre eso, sobre cómo logramos que los responsables mayores de los delitos paguen cárcel.
El cartel de Medellín hizo estallar más de 200 bombas en lugares públicos que dejaron miles de víctimas. Voló un avión con pasajeros y estuvo a cargo de secuestros y asesinatos de policías y políticos para frenar la extradición de Pablo Escobar y otros narcotraficantes.
Yo calculo que en mi propia mano pasan 250 personas y tengo que ver cuál es la muerte de 1.500 personas. Que realmente por el cartel de Medellín las víctimas inocentes muertas del cartel de Medellín son muchas.
Popeye fue condenado a 30 años de prisión tras entregarse a la justicia. Ante el cumplimiento de las 3/5 partes de la condena, abandonó la cárcel. Para algunos sectores del país, Velázquez colaboró con la justicia. Para otros, guarda todavía muchos secretos. Sin embargo, distintos analistas coinciden en que la verdad sobre la guerra del narcotráfico va más allá de Popeye.
El Estado colombiano se había aliado con el cartel de Cali. Los Pepes eran una relación entre los dos, lo cual ahí surgió buena parte del paramilitarismo y de la violación sistemática de los derechos humanos en este país que se dio a partir de entonces. Esa unión entre los mafiosos y el Estado a través de la policía y el ejército.
Los colombianos que la apuestan a la reconciliación esperan verdad, justicia y reparación frente al conflicto colombiano, pero también frente a la violencia de los paramilitares y el narcotráfico, que han tenido en la política grandes aliados. Lorena Hoyos, Telesur, Bogotá, Colombia.
Nos vamos a noticias de América del Sur. El ministro de Defensa de Argentina, Agustín Rossi, entregó actas de la dictadura a las autoridades de radio y televisión de ese país. En el acto estuvieron presentes las asociaciones de madres y abuelas de Plaza de Mayo, empleados de la radio y televisión públicas y oficiales de gobierno. Escuchemos las voces de algunos de ellos hablando de la importancia de tener acceso a esos documentos internos de la sangrienta dictadura militar.
Nosotros encontramos esta documentación porque a mí me informó el jefe de la Fuerza Aérea que estaba esta documentación en el segundo subsuelo del edificio Cóndor. Si a mí no me informaban, no la encontraba. Esta documentación fue producida hace 36, 37, 35 años y la pudimos encontrar con perfecto estado de conservación. Estaban 6 biblioratos, que son los que reflejan estos 6 tomos, con cada una de las actas con un folio, escritas con las máquinas, viejas máquinas de escribir eléctricas, firmadas con las firmas originales de cada uno de los comandantes en jefe, en cada uno de los momentos de la dictadura. Así que si pudimos encontrar esta documentación después de tantos años de haberse producido en tan buen estado de conservación, ¿cómo no tener la expectativa de encontrar lo que todavía falta? ¿Qué hay en estas 280 actas, en estas 280 reuniones? Bueno, hay de todo como en botica, digamos, ¿no? Desde decisiones trascendentes hasta un planito en un acta de cómo se tenían que ubicar los distintos invitados del acto de asunción de reemplazo de uno de los miembros de la Junta. Hay muchísimo muchísimo material sobre papel prensa en los dos primeros años, 76 y 77. La mayoría de las veces que se hace referencia a papel prensa, se hace referencia junto con papel prensa con la detención de la familia, de los familiares de Greiber. De hecho, fines del 77 no aparece más, no hay casi menciones más a papel prensa ni a la detención de la familia Greiber en el resto de los años de la dictadura. No hay otro país en el mundo que haya podido construir sobre este lema que hoy ya pertenece al conjunto de los argentinos, memoria, verdad y justicia, lo que hemos hecho nosotros. Aquellos que cometieron delitos de lesa humanidad entre el 76 y el 83 están siendo juzgados por tribunales comunes, algunos juicios han terminado, los que han salido condenados están cumpliendo condena en cárceles comunes, los que han salido absueltos han salido absueltos, se han llevado los juicios con todas las garantías del debido proceso. No hemos tenido necesidad de construir tribunales especiales, pero sin duda que eso también ha marcado enormemente al conjunto de la sociedad argentina, y ciertamente es una política que es mirada con admiración en todo el mundo y del cual los argentinos nos tenemos que sentir verdaderamente orgullosos.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it is Bathrob Spears Broadsides, the August 28th edition. So stay tuned and don't go away. Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris, of course, and hear whoever you are, and the phone number is 427-3772 if you want to call in. The show concerns itself with civil rights, or the lack thereof, in Santa Cruz, mostly all around poor people, but also around other minority groups, as well as abuses by government, police, and so forth, locally. Although I often stray a bit into national and international affairs, insofar as they seem to me to have a bearing on our local situation. So that's what I do, and I encourage you to call in with your reports and your questions and your comments and your experiences, because that's really more important than anything I've got to say, at least as far as new information for me goes. I pretty much reiterate the same concerns each show, try to give you a little new information, try to pass on some of the events and interviews I've had with people outside in the course of the last week, or sometimes even further back, sometimes much further back. But really, if this is a community station, then the more the community participates, the more we actually can exchange information that can help all of us to get a better picture of what's really going on. So, in the news recently, of course, although less specifically to Ferguson, Missouri, and the murder of Michael Brown, that's how I see it anyway, have been, but the issue of police abuse nationally and also locally, one I always raise a lot in terms of particular experiences of people who've suffered that or claim to have suffered that kind of abuse, is one that is highlighted by the Ferguson abuse murder of Michael Brown and the killing of the other guy recently, whose name I actually wrote down, but I think I may have a little trouble pronouncing it. And there are numerous killings throughout the country by police which have been highlighted recently because of the particular media focus on Ferguson and the realities that the police abuse and the media focus have exposed. And we've talked about that on the air. A huge system of grinding fines out of people at a massive rate, white supremacy in blatant and explicit power with 70% of the population black and all of the, except for one of the council members, white, and a huge proportion of the police department, white. It's been pretty clear, and the reason it's gotten clearer is because, not just because these shootings happened, they happen all the time. I mean, they happen with, you know, they've happened before. Actually, I haven't looked at the history of Ferguson specifically, but I believe that in the course of my reading, I've heard they've happened before. But they certainly have happened in other places, and then it just, you know, there's a moment of media notice, and then it winks out. But when people raise the issue on the streets, and even to the extent of prompting the police to use essentially militarization techniques against innocent, peaceful political protesters out there trying to say, what the fuck is going on here? Then we are really, I think, beginning to do something, beginning to understand something, beginning to see something, and perhaps see what needs to be done here in Santa Cruz. Similarly, of course, I've often felt that, and I make no secret of it. And so I think I'm going to begin by going to some of the protests that have happened recently in Santa Cruz. And one that happened outside the bookshop Coonerty, or Santa Cruz, as it's more popularly known. Coonerty's family owns the bookshop, and it was a long-time venture by Neil Coonerty, who's now supervisor, and then by Ryan Coonerty, who is supervisor-elect and was mayor, both of whom have established clearly anti-homeless records, and that's my issue, in terms of their not just disrespect for the civil rights of homeless people, but their support of legislation that explicitly creates criminalization of behavior that really only impacts poor and homeless people, or largely impacts them. We're talking about smoking bans, no loitering laws in parking lots, what I call the parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to even sit in your own legally parked vehicle and read a book. That's now a crime in Santa Cruz. You have to walk through the lot, or you have to simply be parking or removing your vehicle, whether it's a bike or a car, in any of the government parking lots, the city parking lots. You have private parking lots, ironically, you have more rights. park in the private parking lots and socialize there till such time as the security guard at New Leaf comes after you, I guess. So last Tuesday, day before yesterday, there was a demonstration at the bookshop, which I'm going to kind of reacquaint myself with in terms of the way it was described on Santa Cruz Indie Media, which is the place I often post on, and a somewhat useful source of information. And there was a story there which invited people to, if I can find the site, it's at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz if you're interested. And actually there's a new story here. Protesters confront Salinas police chief at bookshop appearance in Santa Cruz by Alex DeRosi. I actually haven't looked at it. It's just been recently posted today. And there are pictures of folks inside the bookshop with signs, SPD, that's Salinas Police Department, Stop Killing Brown People. Apparently the police chief from Salinas was visiting and pontificating on issues of gang crime or gang recovery. I was not inside for the lecture. I did come in briefly to use the bathroom, or try to. I wasn't able to. I was confronted by Neil Coonerty, who demanded I leave. And you're going to actually, I think, if the tape came out, you're going to hear that confrontation with the supervisor and former owner of the bookshop, who 20 years ago banned me from the bookshop because of a protest in front of the bookshop against his behavior as city council member and mayor when he did press for the sitting ban in Santa Cruz. It makes it illegal to sit near a building or a kiosk or a bench. In other words, a whole series of forbidden zones began to be set up under his commercial leadership in order to disperse, I guess, what he considered to be undesirables downtown. But in any case, this was a protest about the Salinas Police Department's killing of four Latino men in 4 months. And it's a photographic essay and also a story. I'm going to read a bit of the story, and then we're going to play some of the interviews, and perhaps get your thoughts if you were at the protest, or if you weren't and still have some thoughts about how racial profiling or just general police abuse is or isn't happening in Santa Cruz, because that's really what I'm interested in. Please do call in. And we've had a couple of recent instances reported that I've talked about. Yanadez Brown, in the case of her fiancé and her brother being arrested for being in a parking lot while black with a unlit cigarette in their hands. That's according to her account. According to Officer Barnett, they were smoking, or one of them was smoking, and that was the cause for a ticket, which it's not clear whether they ignored the ticket or not, but it is clear that there was massive police response, and they were jailed and charged with misdemeanors, maybe a felony, assault on an officer. I'm not sure whether it's a misdemeanor or a felony. In any case, there's concern about racial profiling in Santa Cruz, which makes the issue not just a bunch of folks from Salinas and elsewhere, or including local activists, concerned that a Salinas police chief is able to kind of run around with guest appearances while he does nothing about the killings that his own department is doing. He has not yet revealed the names of the four Salinas police officers who have either shot or been accused of shooting these, killing these four Latino men by gunfire. Here's what Alex Rossi writes. Between March and July of this year, four individuals have been killed by officers with the Salinas Police Department. Outside of the bookshop, which is located in downtown Santa Cruz, one demonstrator held a sign that declared Salinas R. Ferguson. Several dozen individuals attended the protest, with some traveling from Salinas and other areas in Monterey County to make their voices heard. Organizers say they did not intend to disrupt the speaking event. Six uniformed Santa Cruz police officers were present at the bookshop for security, as was SCPD Deputy Chief Rick Martinez, who personally escorted a Salinas Police Department Chief McMillan in and out of the building and was his driver. Another sign held by demonstrators said, "Chief McMillan cannot speak for peace," while justifying police murder. McMillan was invited to speak at Bookshop Santa Cruz by Monterey Herald reporter Julia Reynolds as part of a signing event for her book, Blood in the Fields. According to the shop's website, the book documents the history of Operation Black Widow, the FBI's questionable decade-long effort to dismantle Nuestra Familia, a criminal organization, along with its compromised informants and the turf wars it created with local law enforcement agencies. One of those agencies was the Salinas Police Department, and Reynolds made it clear she was a supporter of Chief McMillan's, heaping praise on him for his efforts with regard to youth violence. Community members seeking justice for those killed by Salinas police this year, however, have had to grapple with the department's lack of transparency and accountability. McMillan has refused to release the names of the officers responsible for the killings. "We believe it is antithetical and extremely disrespectful to give Chief McMillan such a privileged voice in a space that is uncritical of his policies and the racist murders he has overseen," the literature from Sin Baras stated. The group also stated it sought to expose the brutality and racism of the Salinas cops and media. And if anyone has a report from Sin Baras, who met last night, every Wednesday, I believe at 7, they meet at the Circles Church, let me know. Please do call in at 427-3772 to the station and give us an update. Since its founding, Sin Baras has primarily concerned itself with the intersecting issues of poverty and prison abolition. The Salinas police killings became an intense focus for the group, though, when they learned the fourth person killed this year was Frank Alvarado, who was a Sin Baras member and a dear friend. And indeed, I spoke along with Frank and a bunch of other people in front of the county building, 4 months ago, around the issue of more funding for the jails that was Governor Brown was pushing. Frank was killed on July 10th, and since that time, very little information about his killing has been released by authorities. They claim he was killed when Salinas police perceived he was coming at them with a weapon. It was later determined to be a cell phone. In May, Frank participated in a Sin Baras rally in Santa Cruz. He spoke about his recent release from incarceration and why he opposed California prison expansion. He spoke passionately about his life and his family. The loss of Frank is still a fresh wound for his friends and fellow activists in Santa Cruz. After his death, Sin Baras immediately contacted the family in Salinas and is in close touch with them. It should also be mentioned that there, and I guess Atash, or Tash, who is one of the co-founders of Sin Baras, talks about the actual specifics of the killing of Frank Alvarado. And it's not quite as clear-cut as this brief summary makes it. I mean, the police were called in a domestic incident where the curtains got set fire to, and a family member, I believe, called the police, if I'm remembering correctly. The police didn't just walk up and shoot him out of nowhere, but still, why the police should be concealing the identity of the officer who shot him, as well as the three other Latino people, whether there is a pattern of inappropriate and even racist, consciously ignored racist violence in the Salinas Police Department. As there probably is. I think it's true in all departments. I think it's true in U.S. society generally. It's hard to avoid. It needs to be explicitly acknowledged and addressed, and then you can possibly make conscious efforts to deal with it, which I don't do a lot of myself. But I do try to focus on cases where the abuse has become at least evident, even to old white-skinned me. Alex DeRosi continues to write in the Santa Cruz Indie Media. One member of Sin Barras held a sign at the bookshop demonstration that read, "Rebuilding Trust, How About Bringing Back Lives?" Frank Alvarado, Carlos Mejia, Angel Ruiz, Osman Hernandez. Angel Ruiz was killed on March 20th, DeRosi writes, by Salinas police outside of the Wingstop restaurant on Constitution Boulevard. Ruiz had reportedly been going through alcohol and mental issues when police killed him after receiving reports he was spotted behaving erratically and in possession of a BB gun. Carlos Mejia was killed on May 21st outside of a bakery on Sanborn Road. Osman Hernandez was killed on May 9th outside of the Mi Pueblo Market on Sanborn. In both cases, Salinas police have explained the men were behaving erratically and that they were killed because they felt threatened by the work tools they were carrying at the time of their killing. Mejia was carrying a pair of garden shears he used for work, and Hernandez was carrying a lettuce knife. In their literature, Sin Barras presented a set of demands concerning the Salinas police killings. The group demands police release the names of the officers who killed the four men this year and hold them accountable. They support the family's call to investigate anti-Latino discrimination and violation of federal rights, and they want federal civil rights lawsuits filed. Salinas Police Chief Kelly McMillan denies police racism, but how else do you explain that Salinas' population is 75% Latino, but 100% of those murdered by Salinas police were Latino? The Sin Barras literature states, after four police killings in 1 year, the perspective vocalized by many is that Kelly McMillan has clearly decreased public safety in Salinas. One sign held by demonstrators read, "Term limits for police." Near the end of the talk, a group of demonstrators holding signs entered the building to display their messages directly in view of McMillan. As the question and answer period commenced, demonstrators became more vocal as they realized the questions they submitted weren't being asked. McMillan may have sensed this, and the last question chosen was more critical, comparing the SPD, Salinas Police Department, to a criminal gang. "I do understand the perception that cops are their own gang, that they are the best paid, most well-equipped gang," he stated. He insists, however, that the work they do as police is entirely devoted to being effective at reducing violence. A Sin Barras member in the audience then shouted out, "Effective at killing our friend who was unarmed. Our whole goal is to reduce violence and make Salinas a safe place," continued McMillan. People in the audience started hissing. McMillan then added he thought every police officer in Salinas was deeply troubled by the four killings. People shouted out in response that Salinas police were murderers and terrorists. After one person in the audience stood up and attempted to ask McMillan one more question, the chief was silent and the person was cut off by the moderator, who concluded the evening. When the question went unanswered, protesters began a loud chorus of booing and then chanted, "Cops, pigs, murderers," repeatedly before leaving the bookshop. In an open letter penned to Sin Barras the day before the protest and posted to her Facebook page, Reynolds stated that police legitimacy can and should be part of the conversation, but that it is not all of the conversation. And there are a lot of good photos here. A little bit more to the article. One individual addressed the issue in remarks made online directly to Reynolds. "You're a tool of state power. Journalists should always be critical of power or else they are complicit with its abuses. And providing a forum for the head of a murderous police department to spew out shit is an even worse form of publicity." "Police are so obviously on the front line of maintaining the poverty and oppression that leads to the violence that you pretend to be concerned about. You are either dangerously naive or willfully supporting their oppression." And you can learn more by going to Alex DeRosi's story on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Numerous photos, including the two police officers who I saw out there. I got there around, I think shortly after 7. I think the protest started at 6:30. And there's photos of the police chief and folks in the bookshop. I'd never seen so large a crowd in the bookshop. But then, to be candid, I have not been in this bookshop since 1994 because I was banned from it by the then owner, Neil Coonerty, who, as I said, again confronted me and demanded that I leave. But again, that really isn't the major issue. I mean, that's an issue of mine. I think accessibility to these places, because I was banned for political reasons, a protest that I did against him for his actions as mayor, resulted in his 2 days later banning me because some other person who I have no idea who it was broke one of his windows. I have no idea even why they did it. There was no, nothing attached to it, but I was blamed for that and have been persona non grata there ever since. And there's a lot of interesting pictures. And let's hear some interviews from the street. We're going to begin, I think, with me at the courthouse some days ago when I was investigating a report by a Huff member that apparently the use of stay-away orders in San Lorenzo Park, which became law last year, you don't have to be convicted of an infraction, you just have to be ticketed for an infraction, can then result in any security guard or police officer or CSO giving you a stay-away order for 24 hours. And so people have largely then moved to the county property, which is near the San Lorenzo Park and kind of closer to the courthouse. I have not researched this myself, but that's a report from one Huff member. This guy also reports that the underpass, the walkthrough that you can, I'd always thought to be a public and accessible walkthrough, that part of, if you go underneath the building, you can go into the cafeteria or you can go to the sheriff's department itself. That's where the sheriff's department leaves off its prisoners and so forth. It's also where all the recycling bins are. You may be familiar that there are newspaper racks down there, public newspaper racks. So you would think it's a public area, but there is now a sign prominently posted, and that's what I begin talking about here briefly.
There's a sign here, County Personnel Test and Test. Mm-hmm. Roof Fair, the area.
And we're having a little, as ever, technical problem, but I think we're going to master it of the way. This is a little unanticipated, but it happens occasionally. Let's try again. We're going to go, I think this goes pretty directly into the Tuesday evening protest in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz.
I didn't see it until recently.
No, it's a little technical. So, because we're technical, we're going to go musical for a moment. So, don't go away. We'll be right back.
Free the land, free free the land, free the weak, free our bodies, free our minds.
Yeah, that was a growly number by Five. It's called Food Not Bombs. So here's, again, we finally found something that's operational here, hopefully, and let's hear some tape from the protest on Tuesday.
A Tuesday evening, about 7 o'clock, I'm hiking up Pacific Avenue.
And having more problems than usual. I'm not sure why. It could be the case of equipment that had to be shot dead, but I kept going out of sentimental fondness. My apologies for the delay here. I think we'll try this.
There is a protest against the Salinas police killing of four Latino men, unarmed Latino men. Looks like there's a small gathering. It's also where there's a lecture or discussion happening.
And, of course, the actual story that was put out does note that three of the Latino men had tools in their hands, and were acting erratically. One of them had a BB gun, one of them had a pair of garden shears, and the other had a lettuce knife, I believe that was. So unarmed in the sense of they certainly didn't seem to have... The real issue was whether they were using these weapons in any fashion that threatened the police, and that whether what the police did, of course, was the safest, least threatening, least lethal approach. And you know, clearly, I would have to say it probably wasn't. You know, and let's hear some more of this protest.
Salinas police chief, an author, and somebody else.
I'm down here being interviewed by
Alex Jackson.
And Alex is a reporter for
the PCS Roar,
which comes out twice a month, every week.
We're hoping to launch a newspaper in early September and have a bi-monthly update.
Where can people get a copy of this if they're not students?
We are not. We're only a digital newspaper, and you can access our newspaper once it's online on the PCSRoar.com.
PCS Roar.
PCS Roar.
And give me those three letters again at the beginning.
PCS, Pacific Collegiate School, Roar, R-A-O-R, .org.
Sounds good. And so you've been asking some searching questions here. Why do you have to get angry in order to, or why should people even talk about anger with respect to this? I've asked, why are there police officers here observing? And then you said, perhaps as devil's advocate, perhaps because you have a genuine feeling that way. Well, you know, they're here to moderate this protest. They're here to protect the people inside from some kind of danger. You see, the whole problem of that kind of analysis is it presumes a danger that does not exist, somewhat similar to foreign wars, when the U.S. starts bombing foreign countries. It presumes an enemy that is not real, and thereby produces a sort of militarized situation, both locally in these communities and nationally in terms of our priorities. That would be my broader answer to you, Alex. Yeah. Anything else?
Anger in itself is an understandable reaction, but coupled with love and passion for this issue won't perpetuate the conflict and the contention.
Well, you know, there is an existing police force that reportedly has shot dead four Latinos in Salinas. There is a police force in an all-white, in a mostly black city, and that has an all-white government over in Ferguson, Missouri, that apparently love and peaceful kind of responses has had no impact on. But finally, the attention of the nation is focused on the city because people are pissed. Indeed, some of them are even looting shops, but not much. In other words, you don't have the kind of rioting you had years ago when the large parts of the inner cities exploded.
Well, I'm not saying I condone the actions of these individuals, but we also have to understand that these are only individuals. And by stigmatizing an entire police force and a community that is necessary for the peace of the community, you essentially disregard.
Why do you think the police force is necessary for the peace of the community? Have they ever helped you?
Indirectly, yes.
Okay, give me an example.
The very creation of a police force is to moderate a community and enforce the legal requirements of that government.
Has they ever helped you, was my question, Alex.
Yes.
When did that happen? I mean, they have helped me, too. They got a car backer that was taken from me. But, you know, I have to weigh that against the kinds of other actions I see them engaged in. That's really the issue for me.
Well, there doesn't have to be this dichotomy of them versus us. I mean, they're individuals and people, too.
But they're not individuals. They are part of a force, a militarized force that operates through a command center, that operates through a series of procedures and privileges. They have no transparency. They have no real accountability. And they are also armed and dangerous. So I'm usually concerned when I see police officers because I don't see them as individual human beings, although they are, of course. But that's not how they're supposed to operate, and that's not how they do operate. They don't operate as individuals. They operate as a task force. They mob you, even if you're not doing something that is particularly worth mobbing. So if you read the flyer I put out for you, if it's accurate, and I was not present when these things happened, so you'd have to judge yourself. An officer created a scene because a person had a cigarette in their hand a block away from here. And there's an ordinance against smoking, which this officer is enthusiastic about enforcing. And so this officer created, within 10 minutes, a force of 7 or 8 officers who showed up on the scene en masse. That's what I call not an individual response.
Well, whatever palliatives make you conceive to why this author on a this officer on a personal level decided to enforce this certain city ordinance, it doesn't.
It creates intimidation. It creates fear. It tells people.
So I have a caller who raises a rather significant question. Caller, let's reiterate what your question was.
I was just wondering what the normal murder rate in Salinas is other than police. I think it's actually one of the highest in the area.
And you were suggesting perhaps that 26 people were killed last year or something to that effect?
It's a number that's sticking in my head. I'm going to...
I don't know either, so I can't say.
See if I can do this quickly or moderately quickly.
Sure, and I appreciate you're doing the research, and you're right. I am, you know, the journalist, but I do appreciate all the help I can get, frankly, and that's why I appreciate you're looking into this.
All right.
Are you a Salinas resident yourself? Are you local, or what's your story?
I'm local, Santa Cruz.
Okay. Did you hear the event? Did you go in and listen to the discussion on Tuesday night?
No, actually, I was at the city council forum.
Oh,
which
listen to
has you. more impact to me than the Salinas police chief.
You know, I'd like to hear your analysis of that because, as you can imagine, I can't be in two places at one time. And I was interested in what happened at that forum, and I understand there wasn't much videoing. I think Brent Adams videoed it, but I'm not aware that Community TV did. Do you see other people videoing that?
No, I think it was just Brent.
Well, while you're looking for this, you know, the stat, but let's whether you can find the stat or not, I mean, let's assume, for the purposes of argument, that indeed the number of people killed by non-police folks way outweighs the number killed by the police department. Your
yeah.
point is, you know, isn't there, where's the rage against the people who are non-police who are killing people in Salinas, right?
Right.
Do I, yeah.
Hold on. Maybe I got it.
Go ahead.
Now that's an ad.
Okay, while you're looking, I'll tell the audience what I said to you, which is that one consideration for me is that we pay the police. They are presumably the non-criminal element, although I don't usually so characterize them, but that I think is the general belief about the police department. They're the anti-crime element, the anti-violence element in the community. So they're the ones who we rely upon to stop the killings as much as they can, and not to, shall we say, do more killings, unless, of course, it's absolutely necessary, you know, for self-defense or something to that effect, or to defend somebody else. The only thing I remember of this was, I think you may have seen it too, there's a video of a guy with some garden shears. I'm not sure if that was Mr. Mejia or one of the other four. It was captured by somebody's handheld camera. And yeah. The claim is he was backing away from the police as they shot him. And
I haven't seen
I've seen it, but I'm not too clear on that with my recollection. Although, it's what have you found in your own research here at the when you've looked into this? But I guess the question you have is, you know, I think the point is that the police, as Chief McMillan admitted, are probably the best armed gang in town. But the question is, Are they protecting us, or are we, you know, do we have to worry about calling them if they may shoot down one of our relatives who's behaving erratically? I mean, that's a real question, you know. I mean,
yeah, but you know, on the whole, I would rather have them than not. So let's see, crime rate in Salinas per year, 2012 is the last one, 21 murders in 2012. 2009 was 29. That's the high on this chart, goes from 2000 to 2012. So, I mean, if you look at it that way, the police are only killing like 5% of the people that get murdered are police killing. And if you have a weapon, that becomes iffy. And if you're trying to suicide, then I'm not sure if I count that.
Actually, it's 20%, not 5%.
20%, yeah.
But that's
this year, which is an outlier. Do we know how many were killed in the police killed in 2012?
Well, I was looking at the 2012 thing in terms of and I don't know how many were killed this year. But you know, the issue is you can't really. I mean, I'd like to have some gang members on my show, real gang members, not people who are reformed gang members or paid people who come in to talk, you know, to have a civilized. Yeah, I want somebody who actually is having these experiences, who is a part of this group, who gives us his perspective on it. And I haven't yet, you know, done that, and that's my fault. I've been around for quite a while and haven't done it.
Yeah, because I'm sure you blend so easily into that culture.
What, the gang culture? I don't know about that. I mean,
yeah.
You've got to be a pretty tough,
you know,
character. I don't know how tough
guy.
I am. What's that?
I said you wouldn't fit in very well. You know, how would they trust you? Because you're just the old white guy.
Well, you know, maybe a white supremacist gang, you know.
Oh, yes. Go to the Salinas gangs and say you're a white supremacist. Please,
that wouldn't work too
well. I'd love to read that news report.
So, how do you... What happened at the... candidate forum. I went to the first one and I was bored to death. So how did you? What was
that?
Well,
they don't get any more interesting. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that was my impression too. Did anybody say anything that interested you that you noted?
I think out of the there was one that really impressed me, one that kind of impressed me, and one that just absolutely disgusted me.
Okay.
And I was moderately impressed with Lainey Sherman. She's very, very intelligent. She seems to have a pretty fair grasp about what's going on.
What did she say that struck you?
Oh, let me find the notes.
Yeah, I mean, actually, she's the only one I've had any correspondence with. Although I'm kind of laggard in that, I'm going to send all the council candidates the same questions I sent her. And I couldn't get specific answers from her on the questions about things like rent control, community control of police, police priorities and, you know, spending a lot of time going after people for smoking, sitting, sleeping tickets, things of that sort. And so I'm not saying she isn't sympathetic to addressing these issues, but I'm looking for people who are willing, as for example Steve Plaich did, and at least on one issue, the sleeping ban, in two of his campaigns. He's no longer running for office, nor is I guess, former officer Mike Pruger, who withdrew.
Current coroner, Mike Pruger.
Oh, really? Right, yeah. I mean, yeah. I knew him as a police officer on the street. I think he arrested me a couple times, actually. But,
yeah, well, since he's the coroner, I'm not really in a rush to go meet him.
Right, well, that'd be you might meet him in a non-official capacity. Yeah,
yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I just always thought it'd be on the table there. So, let's see. Since my metric of who I want on a council is somebody that can manage the city and understand, you know, how to run a city, right now I'd have to very much lean on the Ryan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't
she's
like
got
her.
Go ahead. She's got the background, you know, she's on public works, she's done work with the state, you know. I have a feeling that that would get stuff done.
Uh-huh.
Now, the person that really disappointed me in this was Bruce Van Allen, because he's coming off kind of, and I don't know if it's that old progressive, but it's very paternal. It's like, I know what's best for the poor people in town. And he said something, I think it was about the hotel, that a couple people in the audience kind of reacted negatively to. And he said, oh, when they talk about blight, they're just talking about poor people, which isn't necessarily true, but it's that, you know, kind of new white man's burden that the poor, like these poor fuzzy wuzzies that we have to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also went on and said, oh, he's so proud of his ability that when he was on council, that he was able to, like, stop Highway 1 from being expanded. But all the poor people end up moving to South County, and then they have to sit in that traffic when they come up to their jobs in Santa Cruz. So on the one hand, he's proud of, you know, keeping Highway 1 packed, but on the other hand, he's making, like, these apparently soothing noises to the poor, as he kept putting it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not my favorite by a long shot.
Did you catch what Sherman said that actually struck you? Did you catch any specific positions from candidates that you hadn't known
all
before?
All right, hold on here. I took notes. Hard to read here.
Yeah, I have the same problem. You know what I suggest, caller, is, and you may get bored with this and not want to do it, but why don't you, you know, if you find something in your notes you think we should know about, call me back, because then you'll have a grip on it and you'll be able to, you know, pierce through the
other thing I want to say is Craig
notes.
Bush is crazy. He's just wasting everybody's time.
Who is crazy?
Craig Bush.
Oh, yeah, the fellow with the beard?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I don't know if any other than that. I think he's the only one with a beard, but I'm not sure.
He's the token time waster here. Let's see. License plate readers. ACLU asked about license plate readers. Cynthia said it was a great question and talked about when she was in probation about Prop 69, which was the DNA collection. That's all I wrote down, so it probably didn't make much of an impression. Narayan, not a new issue, 71% use nationwide. Brookline, Massachusetts worked with the ACLU in order to provide civilian oversight. 48-hour dumps there. My notes are...
It's a little hard to understand you, too, because you are kind of referring to notes. Get back to me if you can, caller. Forgive me. I'm going to roll back to this tape, and feel free to call in again, both with more information from your notes and if you have any other thoughts you want to bring up.
Okay. I just, you know, the reason I asked about the current murder rate in Salinas is because it's like nobody wants to talk about it. You know, they're so fixed on these four, three of which weapons, one of which apparently wanted to suicide. So, you know, I'm trying to find out, I'm trying to work up the outrage. Maybe that's the way I should put it.
Well, it sounds like you have a different perspective, and maybe we'll hear from other people on that. And I appreciate your calling in and, you know, giving a point of view that many of my listeners might be unhappy with. So that's tough.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to throw that out there. And,
no problem.
And see if I could get an answer.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.
And you're tuned to Free Radio. It's 15 to 7, more or less. This is 101.3 FM. We are probably going off the air for a while, and we'll be only on the stream in the weeks to come until we can find a place to put our antenna. Yes, we've been told we have to take down our antenna, and that's what we're going to have to do this weekend. So if you'd like to actually hear us on the air, although I'm not sure how strong our signal is, you're going to have to help us. And to do that, go to the website, freakradio.org, www.freakradio, one word, small letters, freakradio.org. And there you'll find schedules and other things, some archives, not so much of my show, but other shows, where you can donate equipment and so forth. And you can also contact us and let us know, hey, there's a great tree near my house on the property. You come over and put it up here and so forth, and we'll talk to you about it and see what we can do, because I think we are a community resource that needs to be, well, kept going. All right, let's hear some more from Tuesday, the 26th of August, in front of the bookshop, Santa Cruz. This is an interchange with high school publication Roar of the Pacific Collegiate High School, I guess, or college, whatever it's called. A fellow named Alex and I were having an exchange.
Don't act in a natural way. Don't reach out to each other. Don't do the reasonable thing. Do what we tell you to do, because we have the force, and you better listen to us. That's what it says.
Well, this is a very specific event, and obviously we're talking about the police force of Santa Cruz, but if...
And this is about the Salinas police force, but for me it's also about Santa Cruz.
If we do generalize that the entire police, if the police are a single force, then you'd have to ask into question the moral integrity of that force, and how do you
start... What moral integrity is that? See, I don't think they have moral integrity. I think they have a command structure. That's what they have.
Well, how does that cooperating and how does that reconciliation with the police force... I mean, we can say all these very stigmatizing things that we can argue with...
So suppose we were talking about the Gestapo in Nazi Germany. Imagine somebody arguing that the Gestapo has a legitimate function. They take care of subversives in the country. They go after enemies of the state. They're concerned with maintaining the peace of the German streets. But if you look at it in another way, more broadly, in terms of what they actually do to a group of people, whether they're black or Jewish or homeless, then you have to make a decision as to what's really happening. In these abstractions that you use about, well, reconciliation, love, following the law, doesn't mean much if the whole thing is skewed to begin with. And that is my perception of it.
I don't think you can necessarily... I mean, obviously there are universal issues a police force will struggle with because of its very nature and its very concept it's organized on. However, whatever organization this was in Germany, it's very different from the police force.
Do you know that?
I'm not actually familiar with
that. No, you're not, are you? I mean, in fact, police forces in Germany were quite similar to police forces elsewhere. Now, they had somewhat different priorities in terms of the laws that they were enforcing, but they were, you know, they were police forces. I mean, you know, they're also demonized and villainized in the movies, but they were police forces. So the question you have to ask yourself is, if you're in Ferguson, you ask, is the police force acting in a institutionally fair and just way? And to me, the answer, based on what I've read, is certainly not. And then you got to ask the same question about Santa Cruz, because that's where we live, in Santa Cruz. Are they acting fairly in what they do in their day-to-day activity? And that's really the question that has to be asked, and that you have to answer, and your readers have to answer.
Well, this very conversation is unfair in itself, because without my appropriate literature view and my appropriate research with breadth and vigor into this topic...
Which you're going to do, because you want to know more about it.
I would, and I hope I do. However, in this very moment, I can't give it the most concrete...
Well, you know, it's not an exam. I mean, you know, there's no right or wrong answers. These are questions that are raised, and you might or choose to think about them later, or you might not, you know.
But the way you present your argument is very concrete and right or wrong.
Well, it is how I feel, and I am also, I'm talking to a tape recorder, which is going to go out to the audience. I'm telling people how I feel about it. And I am confronting arguments that not just you make, but that others make. You know, these aren't new arguments, just as mine are not new arguments either. But they are, you know, therefore something that... I mean, it's true. It's tempting to say, hey, I win the debate. No.
I'm feeling a little bit sick right now.
We both win the debate if we learn more from this situation. You know?
I think even defining it as a debate, it's more of a dialogue, a discourse that we're having, I would say.
Yeah,
there's this very concrete... them versus us, or the very concrete you and me opinion. It's just we're having this discussion about our overall feelings, and my journalistic integrity here is on the line, because I should probably ask you more questions about your organization and all, and not less of my personal opinion, to keep that very objective tone.
Well, I don't know about the objective tone. I mean, you're trying to convey information to your readers. You have a position, which I think it's honest to acknowledge. You have a certain amount of information that you already have. You know, and you're limited, as you said, because, you know, it's you're novice at this. You're beginning. Everyone begins. Everyone begins. So, with, you know, no sweat there.
Well, as a journalist, you have to report on a situation objectively, but I don't have a specific position on it. You have this dispassionate relation with your article, but you infuse your passion for the article by giving the facts that really matter, and giving the facts that are going to allow the reader to continue on this journey of exploration to the subject.
Sounds good. I like that. But let me pause briefly, because I've got to give out some flyers here, and let me give you I'll shut up and let you ask a few questions, then I'm going to run around and try to line people up for Cop Watch if anybody's interested. So.
Same.
Yes.
Have a nice day.
Hey, man. Thank you. Have a woman with a sign, paid vacation for murder, that ain't right. What do you mean by this sign?
I basically mean that this is what's happened over and over and over. That cops have murdered people with bullshit excuses, and then they basically get paid vacation. That's their consequence.
Well,
they don't have a consequence, really.
We need our police officers to have paid vacations, don't you think? Exactly. The longer the vacation, the better. Perhaps they can put them all on vacation. Permanent vacation.
Yeah.
And we've been talking What's your name?
Oh, my name's Kayla.
Thanks, Kayla.
Yeah.
Here's a man with another sign. Chief McMillan cannot speak for peace while justifying police murder. I'm using the proper gender pronoun, I hope, here.
Actually, I identify as a trans woman.
And what should I say?
My pronouns are she, her, hers.
Very well. As a transgender
woman,
forgive me. Your sign says Chief McMillan cannot speak for peace while justifying police murder. Now, McMillan is inside, giving, I guess, a counterpoint to an author who's come to the bookshop Santa Cruz. Is that what's happening here?
Yeah, so I think, like, a big problem that a lot of us have is that this person is being given a privileged voice talking about issues of peace and talking about issues of stopping violence or whatever, when he himself has overseen all these different murders of all these different people of color, and when he himself is so actively part of the system that reproduces this violence every day in these communities for so many people. And so I just think that this is entirely hypocritical. This is a contradiction. And when we're talking about, like, gangs and stuff like that, we're talking about people.
And that's the subject, gangs inside.
Yeah, so that's the subject inside. And when we're talking about this, we need to understand, why do people find these needs to organize in these ways in order to survive, in order to do all these things? You know, these people just want to throw these people in jail. They just want to do that or whatever. And it doesn't actually address these structural issues. And, like, when you think about it, I mean, police is the biggest gang in the United States of America.
And the most well-armed.
Exactly.
I don't see any gangs out here, any other gang members. I see a couple of police officer gang members there, but I don't see any, illegal gang members there. I guess there's supposed to be a guy inside who is a former gang member, perhaps. I've always wondered, because I do this radio show, you know, what the gang perspective is, not from somebody who's, you know, flipped and has, you know, become a good boy or a good girl or whatever, you know, but someone who actually lives that kind of life and her or his perspective. And I guess I can't find it out tonight here, but so are you from Salinas or from Santa Cruz?
I'm actually from the East Bay, so I go to UCSC, though, so I'm a student here.
So you're living here at the moment?
Yeah, I'm living here currently, yes.
Suffered any police harassment or problems?
I mean, like, throughout my life, you know, like, I've been arrested at protests. I've, like, definitely dealt with cops' bullshit on plenty of different occasions. Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty against the police for a long time. I see what they do. I know what they do. And, yeah.
But specifically in Santa Cruz, have you actually had a problem?
Oh, specifically in Santa Cruz? I mean, definitely, like, just doing different organizing around campus. You know, we had a lot of strikes going here for a lot of workers that were having actions and stuff recently. And just, like, having these actions, like, I've seen the way that the police work. You know, the police will just arrest you for whatever excuse that they can find when it comes to doing any sort of actions. And then, obviously, there are all sorts of other people just for existing. The police will find plenty of reasons to arrest them.
Anything specific you remember in the last month, let's say?
I think the most recent thing that I remember is when there were strikes going on campus for the UAW union. I was not amongst the students arrested, but there were about like 20 students who were arrested just for just for being a part of this action, just for standing up and actually trying to fight for these workers' rights. And
these are students that were blocking off the entrance of campus, and we were students in a line, and there were two buses of...
You were present?
I was present, yeah. I wasn't one of the people arrested, but there were cops coming in buses in full-on riot gear.
It was for your own protection.
Oh, yeah, that's what they tell us, but...
Protect you from yourself.
But, yeah, they took away, in our own school buses, they took away our students and put them in handcuffs.
Well, that's a conservation of resources.
Bullshit.
Yeah. And, of course, the students' charges were not filed, but they will be, I guess, vulnerable for another 6 months until that 12-month period is over, the misdemeanor charges that they're charged with. And indeed, tomorrow, of the Santa Cruz 11, four of them, one of whom is here today, face up to 4 years in prison for occupying the vacant 75 River Street Bank building. And that's going to be coming up tomorrow in court at 9 o'clock in the morning. Be there, be square, if you want.
Hi there, can I get your flyer?
And indeed, that happened on Wednesday. Yesterday, there was a court hearing, which I was at in part, then had to leave because I had a Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting later in the morning. I got the report from two people who were there, and the courtroom was filled with people. This was Department 6, and the issues were before Judge Siegel whether the DA's office should be essentially removed from the case because of DA Bob Lee's association with a relationship with Wells Fargo Bank, because he had acknowledged in his 2010 election statements that he had borrowed $34,000, or apparently borrowed $34,000 from the bank. However, the motion was withdrawn to have him removed from the case because the attorney who made it, who's an attorney for one of the final four of the Santa Cruz 11, this is a group of people who are still facing essentially charges for political protesting with Occupy Santa Cruz. They occupy the River Street, a vacant building, still vacant 6 years later, that's at 75 River, and they were, you know, agitating for a community center or a homeless shelter or, you know, an end to the fraudulent foreclosures at Wells Fargo Bank, and they were, they had a whole peaceful resolution, but there was some damage done to the furniture inside and some graffiti, and several months later, the police and the DA's office went after a bunch of activists in Santa Cruz. I was one of them. Anyway, they're still going after four of them. 2.5 years later, though, charges against most of us have been dismissed for lack of evidence, because there is no evidence that we vandalized anything. I didn't vandalize anything. I'm actually wearing a T-shirt that says I was in the building, as were 100 other people. And it's kind of, you know, tedious to keep repeating these facts, but they're really kind of indicative of the chilling political climate that we face in Santa Cruz now. I've never been charged with felonies before in my life, and in terms of this kind of stuff, and it just hasn't hadn't occurred to me that would be happening. If when people understand that they may be so charged, it tends to deter, I think, a lot of good activists from pushing the envelope, from engaging in peaceful, nonviolent action, which exposes, whistleblows, if you will, the whistle on the real criminals like the Wells Fargo and the Bank of America that are continuing to rip off people at a continuing rate with no real reform and certainly no accountability None of those criminals have been indicted for any criminal behavior, for the, you know, sinking the U.S. economy. I see in the studio with me is Michael O'Grady, who's maybe making some comments. On the other hand, I'm looking for specific comments about local issues rather than lengthy comments about Wells Fargo. But yes, go ahead.
Just a very quick comment. The Bank of America was just recently fined, I think, $14 billion.
Right.
The biggest fine of any institution. But again, nobody goes to jail. None of the CEOs go to jail. So that's a typical kind of
thing. Well, also there was an analysis of that particular fine in the, I don't know, the establishment paper, the San Francisco Chronicle, and I think another one in the Sentinel, actually, which found that only a very small amount of that is actually going to get back to the people who are currently, you know, facing underwater mortgages, and none to the people who actually were ripped off. There's nothing to deal with them, and a large chunk of it becomes tax deductible. So it's kind of a joke, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, it's one of these. It sounds like, you know, the in-home bankers shaking hands with each other from the Obama administration and the Bush administration. In any case, that's what these protesters were talking about. That's what has been dragged on for years, this case, which has cost at least $150,000 and is going to be costing another $100,000, probably $100,000 to $200,000, because now it looks like a six-week trial that's going to be coming up. As I said, the motion to recuse Bob Lee, to eliminate him, was withdrawn because Lee revealed, apparently to attorney Alexis Briggs, attorney for Cameron Laurendeau, who we've heard on Free Radio, that Lee essentially loaned himself money. He had money in a Wells Fargo account, and he lent his election campaign money, which, you know, apparently is a legitimate process. So that was withdrawn. There were other motions to disqualify Lee's office because they offered a restitution demand as a plea bargain settlement to one of the defendants, actually to all the defendants, but particularly impacting Frank Angel Alcantara, which said essentially that they could buy a misdemeanor, a reduction from a felony to a misdemeanor, if they only paid $20,000. But unless they paid $20,000, the prosecution would go ahead. And this was, I think, to my naive ears, this sounds like an attempt to penalize poor people, and you know, essentially you buy your way out of a situation with a restitution, supposed restitution for some broken furniture and some graffiti in the Wells Fargo Bank, which Wells Fargo initially claimed was $27,000, and then it was $23,000, and they reduced it to $20,000, and there actually is now there was also a motion to have a restitution hearing, which I think would have been a good idea. But the judge said, no, there'll be no restitution hearing until such time as there's a conviction, and then you'll have a restitution hearing. Some people heard that as maybe a sense that Siegel didn't think there'd be a conviction. I heard that as a way, as actually a drawback to the defendants, because if you have a restitution hearing and show that Wells Fargo is vastly exaggerating what its claims are, and, you know, getting people to charge huge amounts for small cleanup jobs, you are revealing, you know, something that may not be, the jurors may find relevant, although it's not, you know, it's not actually, it probably wouldn't come into the trial directly, but the public would certainly find it relevant. Anyway, the judge refused to, you know, dismiss this motion. He felt there was he dismissed the motion both that the prosecution was, I guess it was vindictive and it was selective. I may have the wrong word there. There were two different motions. It was selective, obviously, because they were choosing some people out of a larger group of people. I think it was clearly selective, but that was dismissed. And I'm hoping to discuss that further with one of the attorneys involved, or possibly with simply one of the defendants or one of the more knowledgeable observer, because while I was there and heard the arguments, I don't have my notes immediately available, and I also I'm having a little trouble going over that in my mind. I want to have a clearer conversation about that. But all the motions to dismiss Bob Lee and the prosecution and to turn it over to the state attorney general, whose attorney was also there, representative of the state attorney general's office, were turned down by Judge Siegel. And then the issue became, well, all right, when are we going to have the trial? And I had to leave at that point. But what I learned later was, and I was both amused and a little flabbergasted to hear, this trial, which originally, I was originally received an arrest warrant in February of 2012. It is now August of 2014. And now the trial will be held in July of 2015, unless one of the attorneys has to go on some sort of family affair, which, in other words, they have to get all their schedules lined up. And so this trial will continue to hang over the heads of Brent Adams, Gabriella Ripley Phipps, Cameron Lorando, and Frank Alcantara for another year. And it is it's disgraceful. It's also going to hang over the Santa Cruz activist community, the fear that this kind of, it has to be, I see it as vindictive prosecution, regardless of Judge Siegel's ruling. It seems to me pretty clear. They went after activists simply because they walked into an open building and they didn't bother to determine if there had been a trespass warning given, and that's the reason the charges were dismissed against me and seven others, because there was no evidence presented that we were in the building after the trespass warning was given. And the building was open when we walked into it. The police were there. They didn't stop us. They didn't tell us to leave. We walked in and out. We took pictures. We interviewed people. There were four of us were explicit reporters. Brent Adams is a video journalist who often reports. So this whole thing is a shenanigan. It's a vicious political prosecution, essentially, I think, to discourage the Occupy movement. Now, the Occupy movement, some of the people there will tell you, oh, no, this wasn't the Occupy. This is a fringe group called, Anonymous, Alonymous, or some such thing. And, indeed, I didn't sign up to break into any bank, and I didn't. I walked into a bank where a bunch of other people were there, and there was a protest going on, along with city council members and mainstream media. And then I found myself in the middle of a felony prosecution for a whole year, as these four still do. This is chilling in the most deepest sense, and it makes you think twice, thrice, and five times before you even think about any kind of nonviolent protest, some of which are necessary in order to actually bring attention to the kinds of issues that we need to be addressing, whether it's closing down nuclear power plants that are really dangerous because they're on earthquake faults, you know, whether it's demanding humane and just treatment of people who are outside and poor because they have to sleep at night like the rest of us. They should have the right to use the public spaces, the rest of us. Do we all should have the right to use the public spaces? Anyway, that little tirade aside, that's what happened on Wednesday, as far as I know, at the Santa Cruz 11 hearing. In other words, there's another massive amount of money to be thrown away on behalf of essentially saving the face of the police department and the DA's office. The police department has to show it's tough because they didn't want to go in and pepper spray everybody and start beating people up and maybe shooting people, because not only would that have been ineffective and produced a sort of a mini Ferguson or maybe a maxi Ferguson, but it would have resulted in rioting downtown. And there would have been a lot of, I think, windows broken, businesses vandalized. People would not have been, that would have been the response, at least to some people, to that. And I'm not saying that's what the average Occupy person did, but there were people who are not necessarily respecters of private property, whose response to violence against them is counterforce or violence against what they consider to be the main criminals, which have to do, I really don't think the merchants downtown are the main criminals, but they certainly, you know, are complicit in discrimination against classes of people. And, I mean, they're just trying to, you know, survive in their own way. It's all kind of a weird rat race and a sad situation. But let's get back to this protest in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, which was pretty tepid. I mean, there was like a dozen people out front with signs, and the inside was packed because it was a lecture. But and there were two cops standing there kind of surveying the scene from under the eaves of the bookshop Santa Cruz. But it was pretty mellow. And Officer Azua showed up later in the day to kind of stand there with his hands on his hips, looking about. But, you know, there were no arrests. There were no citations. I didn't see any warnings given to people. And as far as I'm concerned, if that's how the police behave, I don't like to see them present in such circumstances because I don't think they're necessary there. I think they serve to intimidate, but that's fine. We all have a right to be there. But see, the police aren't choosing to be there. They're directed to be there. And therefore, what you're seeing is a military force of a certain kind being told, don't engage in any protest that makes us unhappy, is really what they're saying. Let's hear some more from the Tuesday night. Night before last.
Oh, yeah. And we've been talking with
Kayla
and Nikki. Thanks,
really
Nikki.
Kayla,
appreciate it. Talking with Chris. And Chris, you're holding some magic cards and also some literature that I've given you to put aside there, and you're being very nice and keeping it for me. But you're outside?
Yes.
And have you been, that means it's the H word in Santa Cruz, homeless or whatever. Or, and have you experienced any positive or negative contacts with police?
Mostly pretty peaceful and positive.
That's good.
But also, I could see that they're trying to uphold, you know, kind of system, and I understand it and I respect it. But at the same time, you know, they could just as easily leave us be. You know, if we're not causing any trouble, then there should be no issue. And some cops understand that. That's a good thing.
So you sleep outside?
Yes.
And you sleep inside the city limits or outside?
In the city limits.
Have you been hassled for doing that?
Yeah. I woke up late one morning and they go, hey, you gotta get up or go or something, and I was like, All right.
No citations?
No, nothing yet. I've only been out here 2 weeks. I left a very rich family, and I got tired of all the, you know, the
bullshit.
Yeah, the bullshit.
Whatever that was.
You know, like, I didn't think that money was everything, and that's what my dad wanted, and so I was just tired, and I finally left. And I'm happy.
Here you are.
Yeah.
You look well rested in spite of the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz.
So I'm getting so much more. I'm bettering my health, you know, so that's good.
Yeah, that's right on.
And whenever I think of the cops harassing, I was just like, well, what would it be like with no cops at all? You know, it'd be chaos. So you got to at least have a balance with them.
I don't really agree with that. I think I've seen people take over the functions of police officers, for example, in directing traffic, and your neighbor can help you often much more quickly than a police officer can. You know, and how often, I mean, you have all these TV shows that show all this violent activity that the police are supposedly addressing, but that's rare, actually. The violence mostly comes from forcing people to try to do what they don't want to do or what they need to do but aren't allowed to do, like sleeping, like sitting down next to a building, things of that sort. That's my view, anyway.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree with you on that.
Of course, I'm talking about the violence among the groups that I'm aware of. I'm not talking about the violence that, you know, you see dramatized. Well, the violence that we mentioned earlier in terms of gang shootings in Salinas, where we heard from the caller that there were, five or six times as many presumably civilians shooting civilians as police officers shooting civilians. If the rate, the murder rate continued in Salinas as it was in 2012 or 2009. But based on my experience in Santa Cruz, I don't hear a lot of stories of police officers actually helping people. I mean, they have a nice exterior, they smile, they could be friendly to you, they may provide you with the illusion of security if you're a middle-class person, and they have helped me on a number of occasions in the last two decades. And on three or four occasions, my car, apparently is a favorite for a joyride, has been taken, and the police on two or three of those occasions have been able to advise me as to where it was. Like on one occasion, they pursued the guy in a high-speed chase. I don't know if that was such a hot idea. But I don't really have a sense of how frequently police are really helpful to individuals I know. Now, that may be because the people I know are not big fans of either the police or at least of crediting the police with doing stuff. So, I have a limited background here. If you want to call in and praise the Santa Cruz Police Department for stuff it's done to help you, that's fine. because I think we need to know. We need to know that, too. We need to know where help is happening, if it is happening, and where it isn't. Let's hear some more from Tuesday's protest outside the bookshop Santa Cruz of Salinas Police Chief McMillan, whose department, and I believe it's he has the authority to release the names if he wants, although maybe there's some union restriction of the police officers who killed four Latino men in the last 4 or 5 months in Salinas.
Yeah.
And we've been talking with?
Chris.
Thanks, Chris. So it's around 20 to 8, and we're still... crowd seems to be bigger than it was a few minutes ago. I'd say, 30 people at least here in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, where Julia Reynolds is speaking on Blood in the Fields, her book, 10 Years Inside California's Nuestra Familia Gang, panel discussion and readings. But the real focus of this is... on the killings in Salinas that have happened recently, and that there's one big sign which Tom Scribner is now holding, Fuck the Police.
It's actually the statue of Tom Scribner, who's the musical saw player whose statue sits in front of the bookshop Coonerty.
Yeah, so I won't have any sexual congress with those police officers. Here's an observer. Any comments? He's a man who keeps a strong, silent perspective.
Victoria, B.C.
So, is this your Fuck the Police sign that you're adjusting here in Tom Scribner's lap?
It's not, but I was admiring the Fuck the Police sign because I'm a big fan of Fuck the Police.
I see. But you're not really talking about an intimate relation with the police, but rather an expression of anger and indignation against the police misconduct.
Absolutely. All cops are bastards.
And is that also the case up in B.C. where you hang out?
Oh, yeah. The cops are real bastards up there, too.
You have the Royal Mounted Police? Aren't they mounted and running around on their horses and stuff?
Well, you know, they keep racism alive really well and also like to kill people up there for no reason, so...
Well, it's a tradition, you know.
It's a executed tradition, I suppose.
Mm. So what brought you to this particular protest here in front of the bookshop Coonerty, as I call it?
I heard that there was some killer cop that was going to be in there justifying his police brutality, and so came down in solidarity with people.
The head of the Salinas police force are talking about, madam. What do you mean, killer cop? This man is too big to fail. Don't you know that?
Well, that's what they like to think.
Indeed. And have you been at a lot of protests of this kind?
Sorry, what was the question?
A lot of protests. Is this one of many you've been at, or are you an old hand? Are you one of these outside agitators I've heard about?
No, I've definitely been to a few in my time.
And are you based in any city, or are you just traveling with me?
I'm based in Victoria, B.C., where the police really like to criminalize poverty, and we have a lot of trouble with them there.
And so you flew down for the protest?
No, I caught a train, and I'm here visiting friends, but I've been coming out in support. I was at the SC 11 parade as well.
So you'll be at the SC hearing tomorrow at 9 o'clock?
I'm going to try and make it.
A little early in the morning, perhaps?
It is early in the morning.
Right on.
And of course, the SC 11 is the Santa Cruz 11, for those who weren't following.
And we've been talking. Anything you want to say before we move on?
No, I think Fuck the Police sums it up.
Thank you. We're talking with
Steve Schnurr.
And Steve, you're a man who works on bikes.
I sometimes do work on bikes at the bike church, help other people work on their bikes.
And indeed, for several years, you've been kind of querying as to what happened to all the bikes that the bike church used to get from the police department.
Indeed. And I know, Robert, you've sent in some public records requests, and I didn't go through the formal process, but I sent to the city council and the city managers a few weeks ago, maybe a week ago, some... I guess I had noticed that it doesn't appear that many bikes are going out, so I was asking for data and explanation, et cetera, and no response from anybody. Well, I have talked with Micah about it, and he...
Councilmember Micah Posner.
Micah Posner, yes. And he...
Fearless Micah Posner. Micah the Mouse, as some have called him.
Well, I don't have any comment about that, but he did...
But not the rat, let's be honest.
He asked... the head of Parks and Rec. Like, what's going on? It doesn't appear that any bikes have been distributed since one small event has happened in 8 months, and not many bikes went out. And so he was asking.
They've gone to the auction. They've gone to auction in what? And online. What's the problem with that, Mr.
They've neither confirmed nor denied it. They don't give any information about anything. So, but then the Parks and Rec told him, oh, well, you know, funny you should ask, or, oh, well, good timing. We're just about to do another one. So it had the appearance that they weren't even doing anything until Micah asked them, that he's not interested, at least he didn't tell me he was
interested
in fighting on it. He was, like, more useful to get some different people elected, and then then it would change.
We'll wait until we get a more political capital, as I think they reform from the inside.
Well, I don't think he was talking about political capital, but just because he's already been to the council and they've already voted us down, so he just didn't.
Did he consider coming to the community? Or I guess it hasn't entered his mind yet.
Well, you could talk to him about that.
Right? I don't think it's worth talking to him about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe you do, because you were a close comrade in arms of his for a period of time. You worked in the same office.
I helped on his campaign, too. I've been friends with him for a long time.
I don't consider myself not a friend of Micah's. I just, you have to be, you know, straightforward with politicians, even if they've been your friends or are your friends.
That's true. Although in this particular case, I agree with him that he might have better things that he's fighting on, and he can't do everything all the time. But
I don't know. You know, the things that I've asked him to do don't seem to be large things, but they're things that he is afraid to do because he doesn't seem to want to offend the staff or the police department or other city council members.
Yeah, it's true. It's a weird world once you get yourself into politics.
So what have been the new new developments, if anything, that have happened recently? And I mean, you say that you've spoken to Councilmember Posner, and he said, oh, I can't do anything, or I've tried, or the council's against me, and I'll wait until new people are elected, hopefully. Anything else? And you've also said that there was a token response in terms of the police department saying, we'll give away one, I'm not sure how many, a small number of bikes in response to...
Well, what happened was they had stopped, first they stopped giving the bikes, all the bikes to kids, and violated the municipal code by giving them to a for-profit business that was selling off a lot of the nice adult bikes.
The Bike Dojo.
Yeah, but then we pressured on that for a year, and combined with their, possibly with the owner of the Bike Dojo himself being difficult, for whatever combination
Rob,
of it,
Miles.
For whatever combination of factors, they decided after a year or so after we had been pressuring them that they finally ended that and said, oh, we can't do that. That does violate the code. And then they just started auctioning. They didn't tell us, but then we found out later they had just started auctioning all the bikes. And we did rally a lot of public pressure, and it was overwhelming support that they should give the bikes to youth. And then, like, if not 100%, damn near 100%, you know, of people that had contacted the council and came to the meeting. And then probably like 80-90% of those people, in addition, said that they supported the bike church. But the council felt the pressure they had to get some of the bikes to kids. And so they came up with this weird way to pretend like they were doing it, where they gave some of them to kids through their own youth teen center program, but then some of them would be auctioned. And then since that decision, which was about 8 months ago, I think, they've only had, to my knowledge, one distribution that didn't get that many bikes out. My coworker who runs the Green Waste to School program went and said it was way smaller than the ones that used to happen, and they made it really difficult. It was like on a weekday, and the kids couldn't get a bike without their parents there. And, you know, it was just, and then since then, nothing to my knowledge. Since they don't share information, there might be stuff I don't know. But to my knowledge, there have been no bikes distributed in all the months since then.
Very small number. I think I sent you an email about that.
And in fact, after repeated requests, I did get the specifics of how many bikes were being distributed to, through the teen center, and how many were being sent off to auction. And it was overwhelmingly they were being sent off to auction. I got very specific figures after repeatedly asking. And I believe I did forward those figures to Steve Schnarr, the guy who I'm talking with, who works with the Bike Church and People Power. And, you know, he has spoken out against this, about the failure of the former mayor, Hillary Bryant, to be transparent and what's going on in the relation of her spouse
as a business partner in the bike dojo, where apparently the Santa Cruz Police Department unilaterally decided to start funneling bikes rather than give them to the bike church, which they developed some hostility toward because the bike church is located next to Sub Rosa, which tells the police, don't come in here. Unlike many other shops which have these disgusting support your local police signs. And I say that not because I don't think in some cases the local police shouldn't be supported. I say this unthinking, jingoistic flag-waving for the police department, which followed the killing of two, frankly, mediocre to poor officers, Butler and Baker. And I have to say that because that was my analysis of this more than poor for Baker. Baker was a known harasser of homeless people and also concerned about his... about his racism in terms of his pursuit of an African-American tarot reader back in about a decade ago. So I'm hoping that Steve Schnarr, who, again, these people all feel they have to go on tippy-toe, I think, because they're dealing with the city council and the city, different city groups, so they can't be too outspoken in how they proceed. And they want to, tread lightly and all that sort of thing. I believe in the opposite. I believe you should make as much noise as possible about these issues, and then you might get some response. And sometimes that works, and sometimes it doesn't. In any case, let's hear some more from me and Steve. I think this conversation is kind of winding down, and the bookshop, at the bookshop Santa Cruz, or the bookshop community, as I call it.
Again, the point is, however, that after all these wonderful people spent a year begging and pleading and going through political channels, they stayed within those channels, and of course the city council said, fuck off, go away, knowing that this group of people would go away because they don't have, shall we say, an interest in being extremely militant, like marching to the police department, like holding an auction at the police station, like raising the issue by sitting in the city manager's office. None of that stuff, because people have day jobs, they have to be concerned, they have families, many of them, and they're only willing to go to a certain point, and the city council knows that, and so can ignore these folks.
I don't know, Brett Robert.
You folks.
I, they ignore you. You do all those things.
Not entirely.
Yeah.
I get public records, for example, and other people don't sometimes, but more important than that, if a mass of people come and not just one, it makes a difference. And you guys have not bothered to do that. So, I mean,
yeah.
It's been pretty clear to me that that's... I've urged you at different times to take some action.
Fault.
It's not his fault. Insofar as he's a leader in the situation, he bears some responsibility. I disagree with you. Steve? Of course he is.
Anarchists don't have leaders.
Yeah, he's not an anarchist.
Okay.
He was in the building, though. I see his T-shirt.
Yeah, I saw you in there, Robert. You
well, I was in the building.
No
I was in the building, yes. On the radio.
We're referring, of course, to the 75 River Street, and there's always a little dialogue going on back and forth because of the court hearing that was happening the next day, which I talked about a moment ago.
That's just a joke. They aren't actually making criminal admissions to felony charges.
Okay. Well, I thought there's been pictures and things. But am I wrong?
We can find a picture of you, Schnarr, in the building.
That's right. You may have been in there before the cops warned you at 5 or something.
Right. No. That's the escape clause.
I was a little worried.
And we've been talking with...
No, I doubt it.
Steve Schnarr.
Thanks, Steve. And your name, Mr. Won't give your name.
I'm not involved.
He's uninvolved. There you go.
I'll tell you.
Go ahead, uninvolved man.
Well, on the issue of bicycles.
Yes.
There's a lot of bike theft in this town.
Yes.
That would be very easily solved by simply putting a GPS locator on a bike as bait. But the police don't do that. Why don't they do that? Are they just completely incompetent?
Let's ask Steve Schnarr. Steve, why do you think the police don't have a better record about dealing with bike theft? Or what kind of a record do they have?
I don't know, but it's usually like they don't have time, so we have better things to do, et cetera. Which, to some extent, is probably true in a lot of bigger cities.
Oh, yeah, sitting tickets, smoking tickets, sleeping tickets. I mean, yeah.
People sitting down, we can't stop threat. People sitting down in the main center of commerce. That's a real crime.
It's tricky when the people don't have... I've seen this one where people don't have their bike registered and then they can't prove. I haven't had...
But to go back to this idea that, the police don't have time to deal with a bike theft claim, it's not just the police don't have time to deal with that. The police generally don't have time to deal with concerns that poor people raise. I found this to be the case particularly when they have political implications. So, for instance, it's illegal in Santa Cruz to sit on a bench for more than an hour. But some of us felt this was outrageous and unprecedented, and another clear attack on homeless people and poor people and disabled people, for that matter, or elderly people. And so we had one activist wrote up a sign, sitting on a bench for more than an hour, come and get me. And we demanded that a police officer who was doing nothing come over. She was right across the street. I think it was Officer Wilson, actually, at the time. And give him a citation. It was Bernard Klitzner, and it was 4 or 5 years ago. She refused. She kept ignoring me. She kept pretending I didn't exist as I talked to her. And this is, I think, endemic among in the police department. At least it's something I've seen repeatedly. And I think, you know, it's the problem we have in Santa Cruz, which is a class problem as well as a race problem. And it's a homelessness problem in terms of how people are discriminated against because of their appearance or their class. Let's hear some more from the protest, though.
Someone stole one from the bike church, and we tried to get it back, and he, like...
It feels productive, creative, supportive, maybe is the better word. That, I wasn't...
And I'm wondering where this tape is leading. Let's take another one of those musical breaks. I'll be right back. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, soon to be simply on the stream at freakradio.org, which you can get to by going to freakradio.org, then click not on the Click Here logo, but click instead on the little red dot at the top of the transmitter icon in order to catch the stream of Free Radio. Otherwise, you won't be able to hear us.
Yeah, once there was a bike stolen from the bike church, and someone saw it a few days later, and me and another guy went and tried to get it back. And the guy basically was threatening, like, I'm a violent person. If you try to take it, I'm going to fight with you. And then he knew that we didn't have it registered, so we couldn't prove. Even though we knew, and there's a description, that is kind of the way it goes down. If you don't have, bikes theoretically could look the same, and if you can't prove it 100% by having it registered, then they're not going to give it back to you. And so
I don't know. If you'd taken a picture and called the police over.
We don't take pictures of every bike that comes in the bike church. So
when you got to fit with a guy, when you refuse to do it, take his picture.
Yeah.
And call officer anyway. He would be sure he'd help you out. I mean, now he's waiting over there
to stop black people from smoking.
Well, that's another story. And there's a dog after dark, officer. A dog after dark on Pacific Avenue. That's illegal.
Is it dark?
It's almost dark. Yes. Thank you. And Steve, I'd like to conclude. I'm not sure if we've finished that.
Okay. What are we concluding with?
I don't know. You were explaining why the bike.
Oh, it's
difficult.
Shit, Robert?
No, that was not the subject at hand. You were saying that it's difficult to prove a theft, and that also the people who are doing this, you know, only want to take it so far for numerous reasons. One is, you know, that they, who knows, you may have some sympathy for the people who've taken the bikes. Second is, you don't want to involve the police. The third is that, you know, you're not prepared to get into violent or even potentially violent confrontations. I can appreciate that as a middle class chicken shit myself.
Robert, you know, Greg, I mean, it's
not saying you are. I'm saying I am.
A violent altercation over property.
If I hit somebody,
he's looking at
it. No, yeah. No, it's not so much you would hit somebody, but if they would hit you. I mean, that would be the issue. You know.
If it was my bike, maybe that situation would have turned out differently. But I would.
Personal property, a little different there. Schnarr.
Yeah.
So what's coming up in the world of holding the police accountable in different ways, particularly around the bike scene? Is anything happening? Or are we pretty much getting to watch the bikes get dumped into sold for spare parts and occasionally for a little money for the
I don't have a plan right now.
At least on that subject.
Not on that.
You have many plans, but not on that subject.
Correct.
And we've been talking with
Steve Schnarr.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate your willingness to be pilloried on this.
Okay. So
talking with.
Yeah.
We're talking with a person from Salinas.
Yes.
And you say you've had some experience with police brutality over there.
Yes.
What has been your experience?
We weren't
having a little get-together at home once, and this is just one out of the many times that I've been messed with. We're having a get-together at home, and the police just barged in because we're having a party. There was about 7 people there. I mean, there's been wilder parties in the community, and, like, no one does anything. They just let everybody walk out. So they take all of us, set us outside, and they start talking about, oh, you guys are providing for minors, and...
giving alcohol to minors.
Yes. And...
were you?
There was a 20-year-old and a 19-year-old. And
how many people generally?
There was about 7 people or 8 people around there. And so they take everybody outside, and of course they didn't have a warrant to come in the home. No one's on probation, like I said. They take everyone outside, and my brother was talking back to the police. He was giving them attitude, and then they cuffed him. So when they cuffed him, he asked, where do I sit down? And they just dropped him on his face. And I mean, I showed you the pictures of his nose bleeding. He's cuffed already. So, I mean, that's just one of the many times that they just show that there is no respect for the people, and especially since we're Latinos, you know, they just, you know. And then knowing that there are people in the community that are, like, do commit crimes, and then just taking advantage of those people to put them down and just be brutal to them, I think that's just all bad.
How long have you lived in Salinas?
My whole life. I was born and raised there.
And how long ago was this incident with your brother?
Less than a month ago.
And has there been any change in the Salinas Police Department procedures as a consequence of protests against the 4 killings?
Not at all. I think they've just been getting worse and tighter, honestly. Like, tighter on the people, like, just rushing them.
And you came today with a group of people, or this is your own individual effort? Or?
I came with a group of people. We're just here to just listen and see what's going on.
And have you been inside and heard Salinas Police Chief give his, well, I guess he's probably actually responding to other issues in there, but there certainly is an issue that people here have brought to his attention, right?
No, I haven't listened to much of what he said. I was listening to some of the other speakers, and I mean, some of it is legit, but I believe some of it is nonsense, because he says that the, you know, the young gang members are lied to, and everything seems so pretty, but I believe that ever since these kids start hanging out with the gang members, they know what they're getting into, and they're warned as well. They're told, you know what, this is a lifestyle that you're, if you're going to choose it, this is who you're going to be, and you can't leave it. And one of the speakers in there said that they're lied to, that they're told that everything's nice and cherry, but everything is warned, you know, and I believe that a lot of that is stereotyping, and even though that man did go through that, like, lifestyle, maybe in his time it was like it looked all nice and cherry, but nowadays in my age, because I'm young, everything is told to you, like, this is what it's going to be, and you're warned. So
in other words, you say that a false picture is being painted of a gang life?
Not necessarily, because, like I said, a lot of what he said was legit. Actually, all of it, except for that part where everything looks nice and cherry. I don't believe it does.
Now, what is nice and cherry where? What did he say was nice?
One of the gentlemen in there, he said that basically when you're around that, everything looks
around
nice.
Around what?
Around that lifestyle.
The gang lifestyle.
Yes. When you're around that lifestyle, you see the money, the cars, the people, and you think it's all good and you wanted to do that. But in all actuality, you do see a lot of the struggle, and you see a lot of the people, of the pain that they feel. And, you know, people losing family, losing friends. And you are told, and he also said that you don't know that you can't leave, but nowadays you are told, you know, if you're going to be with us, you're going to stay with us. And I think that's just me growing up in Salinas and seeing that. I believe that that's what it is.
Change in how gangs treat their members?
I don't know if it was different back then, because I wasn't alive then, but now it's, you're not lied to. You're told what it is. And
that is to say, the gang people tell you, or the police tell you?
The people, you know, the people that you're coming up with, the people that you hang out with, I believe that they do tell you what it's going to be.
And so they tell you that it's good, it's bad. They don't deceptively lead you in. They give you a realistic expression of what you're likely to expect.
Yes, for what I've seen and what I've been around, yes, you are told the truth. You're not lied to, when you're not painted a picture. It's not painted a beautiful picture. You know, they give you the actual, like, what it is.
And which gang do you belong to?
I don't belong to any gang at all.
Oh, darn. Well, there's a police gang over there. You could possibly, police academy, perhaps?
No, thank you. Thank you very much, man. No.
Would you like to say, or do you want to remain anonymous?
Excuse me? Anonymous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's the report from the inside is, in order to ask a question of the chief of Salinas PD, you have to put it on a 3x5 card? Is that the...
I don't know.
You can't put up a big sign like, hey, Mr. Killer, what the hell are you doing? That sort of, it doesn't go over.
Yeah, you can do that.
I will.
There's some signs inside there.
Oh, really? And are people asking questions from the audience? Are they being well-behaved?
It's very well-behaved.
Dear, dear. Well, I guess that's how it is sometimes here in Santa Cruz, particularly at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. How big is the crowd in there?
Oh, that's right. You're not allowed inside.
Go inside.
And this is a conversation I had outside with an Indie Bay photographer who you're going to hear urged me to go inside because I pointed out to him that this is a legal place to go because the Bookshop Santa Cruz receives money from the city for a public tourist bathroom. And he eventually persuaded me to go inside, and I did, and you get to hear what happened.
Actually could walk inside to go to the bathroom because it's a publicly funded bathroom, but I would have to risk.
I got your back. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Right here, right now.
That's a good idea. I got to give you the keys to my car, though, because if I get arrested. All right, well, hang on. So I'm about to go use the bathroom at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is a visitor's restroom funded by the city. 20 years ago, I was advised it would be illegal for me to go into the Bookshop Santa Cruz, but that was before the city began funding a public bathroom in here. So with the help of a video journalist, I'm going to go in and attempt to use the bathroom. Excuse me. So for the first time in 20 years, I'm in the Bookshop Santa Cruz. Pretty large crowd. I'm going to go ask to use the bathroom because that's what I'm doing.
There's Neil.
So, Neil, I need to use the bathroom. You have a public.
I'm now addressing the former owner and presumably kind of the head of the Coonerty family, supervisor Neil Coonerty, where the bathroom is, because it's been 20 years since I've used their bathroom.
Get out.
You have a publicly funded bathroom?
Get out. Take us to court. Get out. Get out. Get out.
You have a community funded bathroom.
This is a private place. Get out.
You get some money from the city for this.
Get the fuck out.
You get money from...
You fucking asshole. Get out.
Look, there's no need to be abusive. I just want to use the bathroom.
Get out.
Unless you are not taking money from the city, this is a public bathroom.
Get out.
Where is it? Please direct me to the bathroom.
Okay, nice, man. Just real quick.
And at this point, Neil Coonerty walked away, and I walked over to one of the clerks to find out where the bathroom was, found out it was way on the other side of the room. There was a huge crowd in the way, and I think I eventually gave up. But you're going to hear that Neil Coonerty didn't like being videoed or photographed because the photographer who had encouraged me to go in was photographing what was going on, and he put his hands over the lens of the camera to stop that from happening.
Excuse me. Which way to the bathroom?
You know, if you go back here, past the pillar, you'll see the hallway. Just take the hallway.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please don't touch my camera, Mr. Coonerty.
How you doing?
I'm trying to sympathize.
Smudge on my camera, sir. Could you wipe it off? Mr. Kennedy, you got some smudge on my camera. You see that? Look, you got some smudge on my camera. Can you wipe it off? Can you wipe off my camera? You smudged up my camera!
I think this is the...
Look at this, officer. Do you see this? Do you see that smudge on my camera?
Right here. Do you think you can lower your voice?
Do you see the smudge on my camera? That's from Mr. Coonerty.
Okay. So maybe you want to file a complaint?
Mr. Coonerty, smudge.
So I'm looking for the bathroom. Do you know where the bathroom is?
We're down the hallway.
Okay.
So finally, the police officer, I think it was Sergeant Bush, directed me to the bathroom. Coonerty disappeared behind closed doors into the back, And I think the outraged photographer, whose camera had been somewhat apparently, I don't know if it was permanently damaged, but it was smudged. I'm not aware that he filed a complaint against Coonerty for mishandling his property. Neil Coonerty has not been on good terms with me for many a moon, probably for a number of reasons. I mean, it's not just that he has banned me and others from his bookshop, Santa Cruz, for political reasons, but rather it is because he's been a political figure in Santa Cruz for two decades. First he was council member, then he was a mayor, and after that he was a supervisor, and I've had some concerns about that. In fact, back in 1995, the year after he banned me, he was holding, another supervisor was holding meetings there, and I demanded that they either move the meetings or let me in, so they moved the meetings. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio. You aren't Neil Coonerty by chance.
No, but I have to agree with him.
About what?
You're a fucking asshole.
Oh.
You went in there just to create a scene.
No, actually, I went in there in order to use the bathroom.
All right, and your whiny photographer friend should know that you shouldn't be able, you shouldn't be photographing a private property.
Well, it depends. If he's going to attempt to stop me from using a public facility and threaten me as he does, I think it's quite appropriate that he video and audio, which is what I was doing.
So is this Mr. DeRossi, the photographer?
No.
Okay, because Alex, I think, was assaulted somebody who was trying to take pictures of Occupy at one point. So that was just, like, irony there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not saying photographers may not, you know, make a mistake or go out on a limb or, you know, behave badly. But in this situation, I don't agree with you. I think Coonerty's behavior was wrong. I mean, he knows that if this bathroom is public, he shouldn't be threatening people.
And
even
you know you're not allowed in the store.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, caller. If it's a public bathroom, I'm allowed there because it gets money from the city. I'm sorry. If he doesn't like it, he should either close the bathroom, stop receiving money from the city, and actually for many years he simply operated the bathroom himself. And I commended him for it. I thought it was a very good move on
right,
his part.
But it became too expensive about it.
Well, that's nice, but that's one of the requirements of having a public bathroom is you let the public use it, whether you like the public or not.
Right, but the thing about owning a store is that you can allow who you want in, which
not,
means exercise that right.
Not if they're going to use a bathroom that's public there. And indeed, that's one of the few decent bathrooms downtown. Now there are only two of them, Cafe Gratitude and that one. I guess Pizza My Heart is closed. It's a citizen or visitor bathroom.
I wonder why.
I don't know. If you have actual information about that, I'd be curious.
No, you're the journalist.
Yeah, but you've been helpful. Anyway, yeah, we disagree on this issue, and probably will continue.
We disagree on a lot of issues, apparently. But
could be. Anything? Any other thoughts, caller?
I'll bike church. Got some thoughts about that.
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know. Maybe everybody missed the city council meeting I was watching, but they explained why they stopped sending bikes to the bike church. And those reasons were bikes not getting registered, being stolen, and then coming back to the police department multiple times, bikes not staying within Santa Cruz, and not sufficient records kept.
And who, so, do you remember, yeah, I'm here. Do you remember who said this? Because I also was at that
council meeting. I believe it was the staff member. And then what happened is you had everybody start whining and pissing and moaning that somehow the bikes belong to the bike church by some divine right. The bikes aren't the bike churches. The bikes are the city's, and the city disposes of them as they see fit.
Well, let me say this, caller. I think you're talking about Scott Collins, who was the staff member who presented the staff report. I know
maybe,
because I actually transcribed everything he said. He didn't, that I remember, and that my transcription shows, didn't make those remarks. Maybe the police officer who was testifying did. I asked Scott Collins to provide the documentation as to why they stopped distributing bikes to the bike church specifically. I asked for those documents. He refused to provide them. All he said, he kept ignoring it, and he has avoided the issue for the last year. And I could only think that he was doing so simply on the advice of the police department.
And as far as I'm concerned, if there's a real basis for their, you know, if there were specific incidences of the bike church, what Colin said was, as I remember, and your memory is a little different than mine, was that, you know, they missed some of their meetings, they were not a reliable pickup spot. And there was two or three other things that were very specific. And then I asked, okay, well, can you provide some where you got this information from? Collins refused to say. And as far as I'm concerned, that indicated to me that he was whitewashing the police department's political decision to stop providing bikes to the bike church. If he had really said, as you said, we have evidence that the bikes that we're giving to the bike church are reappearing as stolen bikes, and I did not hear that being said.
I thought Steve Smart said that in the interview, that they'd seen bike a couple of times.
Well, he
just played about 20 minutes ago.
Possibly, but I know he was talking about something else. Does the police department say that was the reason that they stopped providing? No, I heard no such thing from them at that time or since. And I've communicated with Jacqueline Dressler of the police department, who's a nice woman. She's actually provided me with a lot of public records. And that has not been one of them. There's been no claim. In fact, the police department refuses to say why they stopped giving bikes to the bike church.
Well, I need to find that tape because I was locked in, and unless I was like super intoxicated.
You know, if you call me off the air, I will give you the information. I can actually, it's online. You can find it online. The video and the audio is still available for that meeting. If I'd be happy to have you play it on the air if you find, or just tell me where it is and I'll play it on the air either way. And we can, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'd be happy to be corrected if that's the case.
All right. When you're playing this Coonerty tape, I'm just like, play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
It's not a stupid thing to have access to public facilities. It's very important for poor people to have that, even if Mr. Coonerty, the king of the castle, doesn't like you in his store. I'm sorry, I don't appreciate that approach.
You couldn't have walked the one block to the parking garage. Nope, you had to go in
the
Coonerty.
Have you compared the parking garage with
your tape recorder?
Caller,
and your photographer, because you were looking for an incident.
Caller,
Ryan was stupid enough to give it to you. Neil.
Caller, if you've been in the parking garage, you know that you're talking about exposed bathrooms, crappy facilities, and also, why should a particular class of people be discriminated against simply to please the fancy of a store owner?
The class is you.
I'm sorry.
You can go in there and use that bathroom. You can't. You are not a protected class.
No, I would say everybody is a protected class because he's taking money from the public. Yes, I'm a protected class. And so are you. And so is anybody who wants to use that restroom, unless they're engaging in criminal activity. Or they have a stay away order.
Probably trespassing?
Sorry? Say again?
Maybe trespassing?
It would only be trespassing. It would only be trespassing if I don't have a right to be in that space for that particular purpose, and I do.
It would be trespassing if he asked you to leave.
No.
He did.
No. No. And I know that's the case because there were six police officers there, and at any point he could have filed a trespass complaint. He did not.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, just go keep throwing yourself upon those rocks, Robert.
I probably will, actually.
Yeah. Let me know how it works out for you.
Well, I hope the bathrooms are open to the public, and that's the whole point. Any other thoughts?
I've never had any trouble going to those bathrooms. I've never had any trouble going to the parking garage either.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear it, and I hope you never do.
Wow, anyway, good luck. You're windmilled.
Thank you. And that's about it for this edition of Bathroom Spares Broadsides. Us soon to appear in the studio is going to be Uncle Dennis with From the Cream to the Dregs. I'll play a little bit more of this as I kind of pack up to leave. And I'll be back on Sunday for a shorter version of the show. And I hope you'll join me as well. Possibly the caller who may have some documentation that I did not see around the bike church discussion at City Council will call back with that information, and we can, pick up the discussion from there. Neil Coonerty is free to do what he wants with his store. I don't patronize his store. I feel that we all have a right to use public facilities, though, if he's going to get money from the public for it, and he can't impose his own private prejudices on a public facility. So that's what's going on. Yeah.
Anyway, let's hear a little bit more and then a little music to mellow us all out from the cream to the dregs.
Looks like a real trial to get through here. Yeah. So, thank you for taking care of this. The bathroom looks like it's too far to get to at this point, so I'm going to... yeah, I guess I'll go around. Sorry, please, go ahead. Yeah. Hello.
Somebody get back up.
Go ahead.
I'll take it.
Okay. When I first started... So it looks like it's a little too hard to get to the bathroom. So I'm outside again, and it's about 8:10. But the crowd was too thick to find the bathroom, unfortunately. Did you get a floor? For Free Radio Santa Cruz, go ahead.
Okay.
listening to Tash talk to reporter Alex from Roar.
More representing the Symbatis organization.
Right.
Their individual opinion.
I think what a lot of people should know, because we're talking about messaging, is that we're out here in Santa Cruz because the police chief of Salinas has done some very terrible things. He's responsible for like a lot of police violence every day to a lot of brown communities, and is also responsible for the murder of our friend and three other people. And he refuses to do anything about it. Right.
And you put the responsibility on the police chief. But why is your anger held with the police chief versus the actual cops who killed these four Latino men?
Yeah, so because we don't know who those cops are, because the police department hasn't released even the names of who murdered, which police officer murdered who, right? So we're holding the department accountable.